following is not a podcast.
What are you talking about?
It's a show for real people who run muddy races and live muddy lives.
Well, isn't that special?
We like to have fun, but we're committed to discovering and becoming the best version of ourselves.
That's what I'm talking about!
Welcome to the Mud Movement's More Than Mudcast, a show about overcoming obstacles on the course and in life.
You gotta do something or just stand there and bleed.
Hear people from within and outside of the OCR community share extraordinary stories of perseverance and success.
I just believe that anything can be achieved through hard work.
But be warned, we try not to take ourselves too seriously. Because that's just boring. Get ready for a different type of OCR experience. The More Than Mudcast. More Than Mudcast. It's not a podcast.
It's a show!
It's not easy being green. Hey guys, welcome to episode 2 of the More Than Mudcast. It's me, Coley, from the Mud Movement. And yes, my buddy Lux and I got to run with some green newbie runners this past weekend. We ran the very last heat at Tulsa, Conquer the Gauntlet on Saturday. And Big Tracy was talking to all of us in the corral before the start line, saying, okay, how many here are running for the first time? I kid you not. It was like 90%. It was like all the newbies decided to run at the same time. So that made me and Lux feel like superstars, even though we're just a couple of idiots. We still knew more than most about how you're supposed to do the obstacles and what the rules are. One girl thought I reinvented the wheel when instead of crawling under the low wire, I did the rolling routine. Oh, and when Lux did the little flip over the cargo net, man, I thought people were going to ask for his autograph. It was pretty funny. We showed rope climbing techniques to a couple of folks who were working way too hard. It was just really cool to at least feel like we knew what we were doing. So listen, do you feel that you need some help selling OCR to your friends and family? You know what I mean. And they wonder why you do this. Why would you get all banged up in the mud and put yourself through this type of beating? Well, if you ever need someone to help communicate your love for the sport, especially if you're wanting them to join you at a Spartan race, man, do I have the guy for you. I'm talking today to Kevin Donahue, who, in my opinion, is about as good of an ambassador as the OCR community could possibly ask for. His love for OCR and everything Spartan comes through loud and clear anytime you see him or talk to him. You're going to love this interview. Then we'll step outside of OCR and into the world of CrossFit, where Miss Tennille Reed will talk about her great performance at this year's CrossFit Games. First, the need to know. Network television got to experience the toughest mile on the planet this past weekend as Tough Mudder X premiered this last Sunday on CBS. And it's kind of funny, we spoke on episode 1 of the More Than Mudcast that maybe OCR needs a villain, or at least a colorful Conor McGregor-like character to hype things up and egg on the competition. Well, if you saw Tough Mudder X, is Isaiah Vidal trying to step into that role? I mean, there were a couple of shots of him mouthing Ryan Atkins, and watch the way Isaiah cut Ryan off during the barbed wire crawl. It was a real in-your-face strategy to stick it to him. And I wasn't the only person who wondered if that little move from Isaiah was what Ryan was referring to in his Instagram post about the race when he said, I always try to race and live with integrity, no matter the situation. I don't know, there might be some coded message there. The Tough Mudder X finals will air next Sunday, September 3rd on CBS. Then there will be an encore presentation of both episodes back-to-back on September 7th. Conquer the Gauntlet added a team event to this year's Tulsa race, along with the same 20-plus obstacles found at Saturday's race. The team event on Sunday included some extra obstacles that would require involvement from each team member. You really had to lean on each other. And I'm hoping CTG will add the team event to more of their race locations next year. Finally, the first ever U.S. Obstacle Course Racing Championships are set for this weekend in Mountain Home, Texas. Enjoy the perfect combination of some of your favorite obstacles from participating races, including Green Beret Challenge, Savage Race, Bone Frog Challenge, Warrior Dash, Terrain Racing, Conquer the Gauntlet, and Indian Mud Run. We spoke to Mud Run guides Margaret Schlachter, who is helping with the event.
Robert Killian is coming, I know that. I believe Hunter is now coming. A bunch of the Spartan Pro Team is actually going to be there. I know that Michelle Wonky from American Ninja Warrior said that she's going to do the 3K course. It's going to be a uniquely American obstacle race.
The U.S. Obstacle Course Racing Championships are this weekend with Elite and Open 3K and 15K races on Saturday and Sunday.
Everyone runs for a reason. What's yours? Tell us your story at themudmovement.com.
All right, if you've been around OCR and specifically Spartan for any length of time, you know this guy is a treasure to the sport. If you're new to Spartan, you've probably still seen Kevin Donahue around because the guy is everywhere and always bringing the energy. You might have watched Kevin as Spartan's daily burn instructor or on the Spartan Ultimate Team Challenge. And you know, I knew Kevin had a lot of races under his belt, but when I actually start counting, dude, I'm just now realizing there's a record in here somewhere. Kevin, how many Spartans has it been?
There are two numbers out there. There is the number of Spartans that show up on the profile. Then there's the ones that count, that for me, that are like, you're giving it your absolute best, you're pushing, you're redlining.
Yeah, you're talking about actual elite men's competitions, which you just wrapped up another. So how many does that make for you?
My 125th elite winning Spartan race finish, and passed a buddy of mine, Elliot McGuire, for the most all time.
Oh my goodness, yeah, that's worth some noise. Congratulations, man. Do you have any idea how insane that is?
Yeah, I started creeping up on it, and I'm like, wow, this is actually going to happen, like, this year. I'm like, kind of nuts to think I have more Elite Wave Spartan finishes than anyone else ever.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm pretty proud of that. I'm pumped, and I hope people see that as a benchmark and want to come chase, because the chase has been a lot of fun. It's been a ton of work, but man, it's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, well, it means you're running dozens of races every year. And I counted 38 races in 2016 alone for you.
Dude, you're right on the nose. Like 38 last year, and then it's going to be closer to 40 this year, as long as everything goes out the way I want it.
So well over 100 races. Surely you've seen it all. Nothing new under the sun. Do you find yourself getting bored at all?
You know, it's funny. It's the exact opposite. Every time I race, something new happens. I learn something every single time I go out and race. Whether I learn something about myself that was good, whether I learn something about myself I need to improve on, whether it's some new little tweak on an obstacle that I thought I had completely mastered, and then I had to make an adjustment. It might be some new person that I meet out there, and every single race I meet some other person, whether it's in the elite wave or the open wave or just some spectator. I mean, I met this one guy at Nationals Park, and he came up and he wanted me to sign his lanyard for his medal. It was a really great guy, and he's like really going after the competitive heat. You know, he's there with his son, his newborn baby, and I got a chance to meet him and his wife. He was just a great guy who loved watching Spartan Ultimate Team Challenge, and you know, then we connected on Instagram afterwards, and it's just people like that that always make the experience. Like, every time I go to a race, I'm going to learn something, I'm going to meet people.
Well, and these newcomers that come to get autographs or selfies with you, a lot of that's because you inspire them. So who inspires Kevin Donahue these days?
Somebody I really look up to recently is Tom Brady. Even though I'm about 2 years older than him, you know, he's going to be 40 now, and he's getting up there in age, but this guy wants to finish off his career leaving literally nothing on the table. I want to get done with my career and be completely exhausted, saying, I left it all out there. I have nothing left in the tank. I don't want to look back in like 10, 15 years. Like, man, only if I were to race one more year, only if I would have done a little bit more that year. I don't want to look back with any regrets, like, that I could have done more. So I'm trying to, you know, throw some numbers out there that are going to set some benchmarks, not only for myself, but for other people that chase and go after. And, you know, I want to have a solid at least 10-year career. And
yes,
I promise myself I will not retire until Tom Brady retires.
That's awesome, man. Well, tell me how it started. 2011, your first Spartan race there in New York.
That tuxedo sprint. Okay, so I see a local cop in a gas station, like buddy of mine, 9 days before that. He throws me a t-shirt. It's got a Spartan logo on it. He's like, you got to do this. I was like, you're right. I go out. This guy named Joe DeSena comes out. He used to come to all the races back then. And he puts a $20,000 bounty on some dude's head if anybody could beat him. And that guy was Hobie Call.
Right.
So here comes, you know, Hobie. And, you know, he doesn't look assuming. He's kind of like joking around. He's like, I'll give you $1,000 if you can stay within 2 minutes of him. Or it was like $2,000 if you can stay within a minute of him. It was either one or the other. But I'm thinking, I'm like, man, I could win some cash here.
Yeah.
And Hobie goes out, beats me by 8.5 minutes. And like later on, you know, I thought, I'm like, hey, that's a great time. I'm like, only 8.5 minutes behind Hobie. And I'm like, it was a tough course.
Yeah.
I find out like 2 years later that he had been jogging through half the course and high-fiving people and posing for pictures, just having a great time. So kind of humbled me a little bit. But, you know, he was telling me that story afterwards. But what really drew me in was it was the perfect blend of overall athleticism and just getting down and dirty, getting back to nature. You know, I was always a kid who kind of grew up in the woods. You know, I loved playing football and loved getting banged around, you know, and all different kinds of activities that could combine my escalating running skills at that point, as well as all the things I'd love doing as a kid. It was the perfect blend of sport, and I just fell in love with it immediately, and I knew that it was going to be a sport that I could do for, you know, the rest of my life if I wanted to, but I had no idea it would get this big this quickly, and that it would bring so many amazing things to my life. I mean, I've gotten more out of obstacle course racing than I think it could ever put in, and it's pretty humbling to think where it's come.
Well, you've given a lot to the Spartan community too, and specifically, I'm thinking about lodging. I think it was Brack and I heard in an interview and some other folks talking about all the people who have crashed at your place during race weekends. Tell us a good hangout story from the early days.
Let me see. It was 2013. I believe it was after the Jersey Super, because I'm blessed. I live within 30 minutes of 9 Spartan races.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're all around me. So the Jersey Super and the Jersey Beast are only 30 minutes to me. So we had Jersey Super, and we had a great battle that weekend. It was Leroy Ruglin, Jung Young Park, Andrew Hostetler, Eric Mata, Laura Messer was there, you know, just a ton of, like, really cool people, right? A lot of, like, the early OGs. We're hanging in my house. We got a big fire going, and there may have been some alcohol involved with a certain couple guys. Next thing you know, Jung Young Park is climbing about 40 feet up in a very narrow tree. If it was any more narrow, it would be a sapling. So he's up on top of the tree, and then Eric Blennis decides he's going to climb the tree. Then Jeff Bent decides he's going to climb the tree. Next thing you know, there's 4 or 5 guys in this tree, and it's just bending over back and forth. I'm like, somebody's going to die. I'm like, somebody's going to get real hurt. And then there was this huge pole that I think it was just a support for a dock in the lake that got ripped out by Hurricane Irene. It had this big spike on the end of it. It was like a 12-foot long, like 4x4 with a big spike. And that became like a team spear throw. So there's basically a caber that a lot of drunk people are trying to throw around in the backyard. It was just out of control. And then I'd say the next best one I remember was probably the next year. It was the first NBC race that we ever had. It was at Tuxedo. And I think everybody came over afterwards. Rose Wetzel, Amelia Boone, Hunter McIntyre, Dave Magida, Matt Novakovich, Isaiah Vidal. I mean, just you name it, they were at the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really early on. Everybody was still just trying to get to know each other a lot. A lot of us knew each other, but in some pockets of those populations, we didn't know. It was probably about 30, 40 people there, and it was just a phenomenal time of getting to know each other and just having great food and chilling out. And one of the girls that was there, Mandy Ricciardi, her dad came with this really nice camera, and he got on top of my roof and just took this one epic picture of all of us hanging out in the patio, just looking up, waving at him. And I still have it framed in my house, and every time I look at that, just see the faces that are in there and how far the sport has come.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, just a lot of people who love OCR and love what we're doing are just hanging out as friends. And,
yeah,
and that's really kind of a microcosm of what the sport's all about. That's probably the number one main reason that keeps me going and keeps me going strong.
Well, I know your friends from back then mean a lot to you. I was filming Amelia's return down here in Austin, and there you were cheering her on every step of the way. And it's not just your friends from back then, but new friends too. I saw posts from Hawaii where you and Alyssa Hawley are just tearing up the island.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, man. We could tell you're having a blast. And you seem to be like a cool big brother with her.
You know what? The first time Alyssa and I started hanging out was probably like Monterey, like last year, and she was new to the team. And Alyssa is incredibly close to her family. Her family is the number one thing in her life. If you ever get a chance to meet her dad, you want to talk to somebody awesome. Talk to her father. Just a great guy. And she's got this whole cluster of sisters, and they're just phenomenal people. And she's really, really close to her family. And at some of her early races, she'd hang out with the family the whole time. And we didn't get a chance to know her as well, like, early on. And I just saw this girl. She's, like, tremendous athlete. She's, like, super fun. I'm like, I got to get to know her better. So we're out one day just having hamburgers at In-N-Out Burger, and I got to know her a little bit better. And, like, I was right. Like, she's just one of the most phenomenal people you ever meet. Her energy is contagious. Amelia's energy is contagious. Ryan Kent, just, I mean, what a tremendous guy. Bracken, I mean, there's just so many. And circling back to Amelia, one of the reasons that make her so special, I just love watching her race, it doesn't matter how good an athlete she is, you're not going to see someone who lets her personality and her vulnerability show more than her. More than any other athlete I've probably been around, she's able to be an incredible ass kicker, but be incredibly vulnerable and honest at the same time. She's got a gift, and I think that's why she's probably been the most influential person in her sport, because of that. You can't get more real than her. She's probably one of the most authentic people you ever want to meet. I mean, there's something about this sport that just brings out the authenticity in the athletes, and it's something special to be part of.
You know, I think that's rubbing off on some of the newer champions, too. Just in the last week or two, some really heartfelt posts from Faye Stinning, Rhea Coble, Nicole Miracle. It's cool to see these tough ladies and their willingness to show their disappointment, their vulnerability, but never at the expense of their drive. And I think that type of transparency all started with Amelia.
I agree.
I'm talking with Spartan veteran, pro team member, and we believe record holder for most completed Spartan Elite races, Kevin Donahue. Hey, Kevin, I want to shift gears a moment and talk about Spartan's Ultimate Team Challenge on NBC. This being your second year on the show, you were with the Little Giants team. What did you think of season two compared to season one?
Season one was incredible, and I'll never downplay it because the people I met there, the experience as a whole was incredible, but it was very raw. And I'll give NBC a tremendous amount of credit. It's the production staff that worked on it. They really put in a lot of hard work. We came back for season two. Everything was better. Organization, the format, the fact that they reduced the team and added episodes so they could tell more of the personal stories, I thought was probably the biggest thing. Having it at night made that all the more better because it had such a much better visual. Now, that being said, filming it in the middle of the night, that was tough. The two races that my team ran, we ran them both the same night. We didn't get out there till midnight. You run this grueling race. There was a lot of craziness with Nick Swisher and all these guys running around there yelling and screaming. And they were phenomenal, and they embraced us. And they deserve a lot of credit for how they embraced us. And they were totally authentic, too. Kelvin Washington, Apollo Ono, they would hang out with us for hours in the middle of the night just so they could get to know us better. They wanted to make sure that they knew us personally and got the chance to hang out with us so they could deliver a better broadcast, so they could tell the story better. And the same goes for MJ Acosta. They did a phenomenal job, just being people and getting to know us. I thought everything was better. It was more exciting. I thought the athletes and the teams that were out there were a lot more competitive. The stories were tremendous. It was an incredible experience. And particularly, I'm a big Walking Dead fan, so the fact that they shot it at Terminus, that was like one of the craziest sets you could ever be on. It was like being in a video game.
Well, and it seems clear they took a page out of the Ninja Warrior playbook when it comes to production value and just the overall format of the show, which worked great for Ninja Warrior and hopefully most would agree worked great for Spartan too. Kevin, I feel silly for not knowing this, but do you work full-time with Spartan? Because I can't imagine how you could possibly have time to have any other job.
No, I do, actually. I actually started my career as a teacher. I have a Bachelor of Science in Education, and I was teaching phys ed and health for a number of years and just decided the public school education system wasn't for me. So I completely changed careers in my early 30s and went into personal training and group training, and I still do that today. Right now I'm in the process of chasing some other opportunities in the fitness world. Mainly one of them is get together my own obstacle course racing facility, and I've been hitting some roadblocks. I tell you what, like, good thing I'm an obstacle course racer, because getting your business started, there's a ton of obstacles. And I have an amazing partner. His name's Darren Schwartz, and the guy's like, not only is he a partner, he's like a brother to me. We had found this beautiful building on an organic farm, and we had a whole format that we were going to do it with. And right at the last hour, the sale fell through on the property. So that was like a big blow. So since then, we've been trying to find the right place. It's a lot harder than it seems. Location is everything, and the price of your square footage and the ability to expand and all these other factors that come in. And I live in an area that is dying for a place not only for major OCR training, but also for sports performance. It seems like in my area, everybody wants to like run to New York City to open a place, or run to North Jersey where there's, maybe more people. Or I live in a beautiful area in the Hudson Valley, and they deserve a lot better than what we're getting. So I want to do it right in my home area and service the people there, because they are on fire about OCR.
Well, man, I hope that comes together. I know the community would be blessed to have a gym or fitness center with you at the helm. Of course, until then, we can still train with you through your daily burn videos. For folks who don't know, tell us how that works with the subscription and all.
Probably one of the hardest things I ever did. I had to learn how to do workout videos in about 4 weeks. Luckily for me, I had Martin Scorsese of workout videos named Lisa Wheeler, and she taught me everything that I needed to know and took me under her wing and did one of the best coaching jobs I've ever seen, coaching me up. Eternally grateful for her and the rest of the staff there. So I just wanted to give them a shout out first. If you want to go join Daily Burn, it's pretty easy. If you go to the Daily Burn site, or if you go to Spartan.com, find the link to training, and there'll be a link for Daily Burn there. It's a 6-week program, but the first 30 days are free trial. and you get 15% off your next Spartan race. It's designed for the beginner to intermediate who's maybe done a few Spartan races or hasn't done one before yet to get them ready and build up their fitness level. So when they get out the course, they're going to have all the adequacies they need to get through the course safely and have a great time and excel.
Hey, Kevin, I was watching Margaret from Mud Run Guide covering the new Spartan Strong group training program, and there you were in on the workout. Let me get your thoughts on that, because I thought the OCR community prided itself on the fact that we don't need a gym. We'd rather have a trail or a mountain, I don't know. But this seemed to be a different narrative, one that, to be honest, looked a lot like the CrossFit business plan. So is that what we're working towards with Spartan Strong?
Well, the goal is, and I mean, Joe's been very adamant, he wants to rip 100 million people off the couch and get them for races. Almost anybody who's exercising right now goes to a gym. There's a whole demographic of people that right now will not work out unless there's somebody else holding them accountable. When I went to that class, other than Amelia and Cassidy, I didn't know anybody else in there. I didn't know the instructors. I didn't know the other people around me. And within 5 minutes, we're all joking around. We're high-fiving. We're bear crawling around the room. It was just like being in a race. The chip came off of everybody's shoulder. Everybody loosened up. And by the end of the race, end of the class, people were like, it was kind of like that feeling like, wow, I can't wait to do that again. It'd be great if we all did this another time. It's fun. And, there's going to be a lot of people that do Spartan Strong, and maybe they never want to go out and do a race. And that's okay, too. But it's cool to be able to introduce them to that community and kind of show people that normally would have no idea what we're about. Now they have an idea of what the community is about. Now they know why that the guy in accounting is on fire about Spartan Race, because this is the kind of support he gets when he goes out and does an event.
Hey, Kevin, you've been around the scene long enough. Give us a good Joe DeSena story.
Here's like one cool story. I called up Joe. I said, hey, you know, can I crash at your place and, you know, go to like Killington the next day? He's like, well, why don't you just do Pico with us? A bunch of us are going. I said, great. So I get to his house and he's like, hey, a bunch of us are going to go skin up the mountain. You put these what's called like seal skins, and just for animal rights activists, not a real seal skin. It's kind of like this furry stuff you put on the bottom of your skis, and it'll slide forward, but it won't slide back. So you can actually climb up a slope with these things because it grips on the way, you know, and holds you to the mountain and doesn't allow you to slide, but it will slide forward. So it's in the middle of the night. There's maybe like six of us. We have one headlamp between all six of us. And we decide we're going to skin up this mountain. It's like 11 o'clock at night in the middle of Vermont. And he decides he's going to do it with this big kettlebell in his bag. We get all the way up to the top of the mountain. He gets up with the kettlebell. We go skiing back down. The next morning, it's like 7 o'clock. I walk into his kitchen for breakfast. And he's like, hey, you want to go back up the mountain? I want to skin it again. And I'm like, oh, dear God, no. But how do you tell Joe to send a no when you're sitting at his table one-on-one and he asks you to go skin him? You just can't say no.
Sure.
So I'm like, yeah, man, I'll do it. Let's go. So I put the boots back on. We start skinning up this mountain. But we took a different route. He doesn't even have the kettlebell this time. So we're just shooting the bull, and he sees like one trail. He's like, hey, you think we could kind of get up that? The snow's kind of deep. I'm like, yeah, I think the skins will stick to that stuff. We could go. So we start skinning up, and he just kind of gets stuck on the side of the hill, right? Trying to maneuver around. And next thing you know, here's Joe DeSena falling backwards, sliding on his back, skis up in the air, sliding all the way down, like halfway down this hill, gets stuck in the snow, he can't move, and his arms and his feet are going, he's got snow in his face. And I'm just like, here's probably the most influential man in the sport of obstacle course racing.
Right.
And probably one of the 50 most interesting people on the planet. And he looks like a turtle stuck on his back in the middle of the street with jeans and arms flailing everywhere. And he just gets up, smiles, starts hiking back up, still beats me to the top of the mountain. He just doesn't care. He could get totally humbled on the ski slope. We're like, all right, get back up. What's crazy is, as extraordinary as a man he is, he's still just a funny, goofy, just everyday guy when you hang out with him.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, man, it's been good talking to you. Before you go, though, I want you to explain this mantra of yours that I see all over your social media. Live vicariously through yourself. I like the sound of that, but what does it mean to you?
What that means to me is be your own role model. There's so many people out there. There's athletes, there's actors, there's entertainers, there's singers, reality stars. People swarm them like crazy as far as, you know, watching their social media and following what they do. And don't live and die by somebody else's accomplishments or somebody else's, like, hardships, you know, like invest time in your own life and stop living vicariously through everybody else's stuff. Start leading your own life, and it's going to be so much more rewarding when you do. Go out and make your own adventures. You know, stop living through the video games that you're playing. Stop living through the TV shows that you're addicted to. Make your own adventure. Create your own memories. Live vicariously through yourself. Drop the mud.
Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and at themudmovement.com.
Man, I love talking to that dude. Kevin Donahue is among the best ambassadors for the sport. His enthusiasm is contagious and just a really good guy. So glad you're checking out the show. If you heard the first episode, you know there's a little bit of a faith element, but I don't want to force it on anybody. So just like in episode one, after the show comes to a close, there'll be a little encore segment where we talk about faith. And I hope you'll stick around for it. But if it's not your thing, that's why we put it at the end of the show after everything else. So you probably have your own keys to success that you're happy to share with anyone who asks, but could you narrow it down to one key? What is that one thing that matters more than any other when it comes to whether you will be successful, whether it's in your business or your training or other personal or professional goals? You know, I heard three different sources give me the same answer this week. A podcast I listened to, an interview I stumbled upon, and an article I read from a very successful businessman who I respect very much. Three different sources, all of whom are successful in three extremely different fields, still all with the same answer. And then, sure enough, I found this clip of Steve Jobs pretty much saying the same thing.
I'm convinced that about half of what separates the successful entrepreneurs from the non-successful ones is pure perseverance. It is so hard. You pour so much of your life into this thing. There are such rough moments in time that most people give up. I don't blame them. I mean, it's really tough. And it consumes your life. I mean, if you've got a family and you're in the early days of a company, I can't imagine how one could do it. I'm sure it's been done, but it's rough. I mean, because it's pretty much an 18-hour-a-day job, 7 days a week for a while. So unless you have a lot of passion about this, you're going to not survive. You're going to give it up. So you got to have an idea or a problem or a wrong that you want to right that you're passionate about. Otherwise, you're not going to have the perseverance to stick it through. And I think that's half the battle right there.
That's Steve Jobs, and there's different names for it. Endurance, perseverance, stick-to-itness, fortitude, whatever you call it. The point is easy to understand. The guy who sticks with it is a quazillion times more likely to succeed than the guy who throws in the towel. So the question to ask, whether it's your fitness goals, your business goals, spiritual goals, whatever, how bad do you want it? And do you have what it takes to hang in there? I'm betting the answer is yes.
Why run it, jump it, carry it, climb it, or crawl under it? Because it's there. You're listening to the More Than Mudcast with Cooley.
The 2017 CrossFit Games included their first ever custom-built obstacle course.
Tenille Reed taking advantage of her strengths in this obstacle course.
Tenille Reed leading the way. She's been the fastest every single round. Here she is, the ladder. Her best career event finish coming into this one was third place last year. And she is well on her way to picking up her first ever CrossFit Games event win. Welcome to the winner's circle, Tenille Reed.
Tenille Reed won the CrossFit OCR event. She also placed sixth overall, the highest placing American woman. Tenille, you were also at the Games in 2016, and you told me the recovery from that was a long process, right?
I basically started getting ready for 2017 in like January or February because it took me that long for my body to recover.
Now, are you talking about physical pain and exhaustion?
My body felt fine after like a week. Like, I already felt like, oh, I'm not sore, and I can go back to the gym. And I tried to go back to the gym. And I quickly realized that, like, 100 pounds kind of felt like 1,000 pounds. I would tell my coach this, and he's just like, yeah, your nervous system. So everything felt super heavy, and I knew it, because every week when I'd come back in, I would feel better and better. And so I would think that I was recovered, but I'd come back the next week and feel even better and be like, holy crap, I didn't realize like how much of a hole I was in. And the reason for that is the amount of volume that I needed for that weekend, I just didn't have time to build up. Like, it takes time to build up that kind of volume in your body to where it doesn't break down. So that's another thing my coach and I worked on, is I just told him, like, I do not want to feel as miserable as I did last year. So basically, we built up my volume so that I was doing more in training than I would ever have to do at the Games.
Well, that's a tall order, because the workouts at the Games are insane. I can't even imagine deliberately pushing that hard, even harder, on a regular basis.
Yeah, and trust me, we have to train so much. Like, I was training 3 times a day, probably a total of like 7-8 hours a day before the game, just like doing all kinds of different things. I mean, I went to an obstacle course gym, would go run and swim, run. That was one of the workouts. I mean, everything that could possibly be in it. I went paddle boarding, I did rowing, obviously all the different CrossFit movements, a lot of different things so that whatever you threw at us, I could feel like I've already done it.
Now, of course, before you get to the games, you have to pass regionals. And Southwest Regionals is nothing to take lightly. You're up against Camille LeBlanc-Besnay and Margot Alvarez. So do you show up at regionals confident that you're going to win the whole thing?
I felt confident enough to think that there was no way I wasn't going to go to the games. My coach told me I was in the best shape I've ever been in. And sometimes you can't really tell what kind of shape you're in, you know? And he wouldn't lie to me. Like, he would tell me if it was going to be a fight. And he just told me, I want you to go in there and win this. Like, I know you can win it. And I felt like I could too. I've been training so hard, putting everything in it, aligning my whole life with training. Like, eating, sleeping, taking my vitamins, everything on time, doing all the work that I needed to do. Oh, I just felt good about it, and I prayed about it all the time, and I just had a good feeling, and I was supposed to go on my honeymoon right after regionals. So my coach told me if I won regionals, he would take it easy on me while I was on my honeymoon, and that gave me a lot of motivation, I'll tell you what.
Oh, yeah. Come on. You've got to take a break during your honeymoon, right?
I was telling my husband, I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to have to work out a little bit on our honeymoon because the games are coming and I don't want to be unprepared. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to be your coach on the honeymoon.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I wanted to just relax with him, I knew what was ahead of me and I still wanted to work out. But my coach did take it easy on me. I still worked out, but he didn't make it like twice a day.
Oh, well, how merciful of him.
He just knows my goals, and he knows I would be very unhappy if I wasn't ready, and so he just helps push me and keep me in line.
All right, so you make it to the games where you're surrounded by some legends in the sport, most of whom have the word daughter in their name somewhere. Thor's daughter, David's daughter, Sigmund's daughter. You might consider adding a daughter to your name, by the way. When you see these kind of modern legends of the sport, are you starstruck or intimidated by that at all?
This year, I definitely didn't feel that. I think I have to give this one to my dad because he instilled like a lot of confidence in me as a young girl, telling me that I can do whatever I want to do and not let anyone intimidate me.
Uh-huh.
I get in the zone and then I just go. I don't think about whoever's around me. I was there thinking I am going to beat everybody. It's not that I don't look at them and think, wow, you guys have accomplished a lot and I'm proud of them for what they've done. Like, I think it's awesome, but it doesn't make me feel like I can't do the same thing.
Well, 6th overall, highest placing American woman. Your best events include the first place finish in the obstacle course race. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you also place 2nd in Strong Man's Fear, where you move a 340-pound yoke 150 feet, handstand walk back, carry 120-pound logs 150 feet, handstand walk back, pull the 310-pound sled 150 feet. Goodness, I mean, in OCR world, it's like a combination of our bucket carries, sandbag carries, and sled pulls. Well, what's the hardest part of that event?
Well, I guess all those pieces to me don't seem that hard because that's stuff that I'm good at. But I guess when you pick up heavy stuff, it gets your heart rate up, right? Then trying to do a handstand walk, it's harder to breathe when you're upside down. So it can get your heart rate up even more. So I think that's why they put those two together. Luckily, I did gymnastics when I was a little girl and handstand walking was just kind of like something we did for fun. So those two together aren't as hard for me as it would be for other girls, I think. And the first CrossFit gym I went to, we did a lot of strongman stuff. So I love the yoke and I love farmer's carry. And my coach has me doing like 300 plus pounds on the farmer's carry. So when I picked up those farmer's carry handles, it felt light. And I was just like, yes, this is what I wanted to happen. Like, this is why I prepare for this.
So let's talk about the O course. It was beautiful with custom Rogue fitness equipment all over. It is a short course where you climb up and over a 15-foot cargo net, rope swing to a balance log, monkey bars, 12-foot rope wall, 5 hurdles. You then have a rope transfer, kind of like a rope rig, hop across 9 varying height logs, crawl under the low net, which is like 15 inches from the ground, and finally climb the 15-foot ladder to the top of the platform. Again, it's a short course, but that makes it really cool to see you all in CrossFit fashion, side by side by side, in your own lanes, just busting it out as fast as you can. How many times did you have to run it anyway?
On Wednesday, we all got a chance to try it out. We had 5 minutes to just kind of do whatever you wanted to do and fill it out. And then when we actually got to do it, you ran through your heat. And if you were the top two, you got to advance. And then in your second heat, if you were the first person, you got to advance. And then that advanced you to the last heat, which was five girls for the winner.
Okay, so everyone had that 5-minute sneak preview. How did you feel about it once you saw what you were up against?
The night before, I told my coach, I was like, I'm going to win that obstacle course tomorrow. And he goes, I know you are.
That's awesome.
And he didn't even see me do it. I just told him, like, I was confident in it.
Really? Okay, so explain that confidence. You had some experience training on obstacle courses, right?
Honestly, I just felt like that obstacle course was more of like an athletic thing, not just a strength thing.
Sure.
And so my background is I've played so many different sports, and I think it just kind of helped me do better on that course. That's all I can really come up with. I mean, I grew up with three sisters and one brother, and we used to climb trees and do all kinds of crazy stuff. So probably a combination of all that.
Well, you were definitely up for the challenge, winning handedly over the other women during every heat you were in, as well as in the championship heat. So what's next? Are you definitely aiming for the 2018 games?
You know, I feel like I don't need to prove anything to anyone else. You know, if I was to do it, it's for myself. And I feel like I can do better. But the thing is, CrossFit isn't the most important thing to me in my life. I want to have a family and I want to have kids. My husband does too. I haven't decided if I'm going to do another year or not, but I'm 75% sure I'm probably going to do another year, but 25% of me is like, you want to have a baby. But I bought a puppy last night, and I named her Madison because she's my prize puppy.
Oh, very cool. For those who don't know, Madison, Wisconsin is where the games are held.
Yeah, so I think that having a puppy might hold me off for one more year so I can train hard, but I can't say that I've decided yet.
Whatever doesn't kill us, better run. The More Than Mudcast.
So glad we got to talk to Tenille Reed. And if Tenille decides to go for the games again, the Mud Movement is pulling for. But hey, I can't think of a better reason to step away than to focus on the family. So best wishes in her decision making. We'll actually talk faith for a couple more minutes with Tenille at the end of the show. Hey, you're looking for some good videos to get your head in the game? I stumbled onto this 1-minute video from Kilian Jornet. Now, he's the mountain runner who scaled Everest in 26 hours earlier this year. Oh, and then he did it again in the same week. If you don't know about this, check out the short video on Outside TV's YouTube channel. The video is titled, Kilian Jornet, that's J-O-R-N-E-T, Summits Everest in 26 Hours. Of course, every OCR enthusiast should check out Scott Keneally's Rise of the Sufferfest, available on Amazon. But I also recommend Desert Runners. Now, it's a documentary from a few years back about some mediocre athletes who decide to take on the Four Deserts Race Series Grand Slam. That means four different ultra-endurance races in 1 year in the Atacama Desert, the Gobi Desert, the Sahara, and Antarctica. Each race is over 150 miles. I found it terribly inspiring. Again, it's called Desert Runners.
It's more than mud. It's a movement. The More Than Mudcast.
Again, it was good to talk to Tenille and to Kevin. Before we go, I want to check in with my racing and video partner at the Mud Movement. Lux is here, and I played that soundbite from Steve Jobs earlier when he's talking about the importance of perseverance, hanging in there. And every once in a while, I wish I would have hung in there with radio. You know, I broadcasted for 10 years, told myself I was burnt out on it, but I'm not sure that was the case. I think things just weren't happening fast enough for me. And so I often wonder, what if I would have hung in there? What about you, man? What's an area where you wish you would have just hung in there a little bit longer?
I think for me personally, the number one thing that I know I should have stuck with a lot better and been more diligent about was that was school. But, you know, when I graduated high school, I went into the military right out of high school, and it wasn't because I thought, you know, oh, I want to serve the country, or I've got this greater honor bound, you know, duty to protect America, or anything like that. It was literally just easier to fill out that application than the college. And I, don't get me wrong, I love my military background, and I, you know, I've always said it's some of the best, worst times of my life.
Well, how would it change your life if you had?
I would, you know, presumably have already been finished with college. So it, you know, I'm working now on my PhD. That would all be done, or law school, or whatever other route the world would have ended up taking me down. I would be much better off in the long run. And even then, if you say, okay, you went to the military, I served 5 years, why didn't I start back after 5 years? I didn't start back for another decade after that. And that's where, you know, even though I got those experiences, those life experiences that did wonders for me, but I just wasn't ready to go back to school. I would not persevere through that. I've also often thought going to the military first out of high school probably saved my life. There's no other way to really know that counterfactual, whether or not that's true. But I was a little bit of a rough around the edges kid, to say the least. And if I'd have went into out of high school and into college, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, the party atmosphere that it really was, and less people were really there to learn, and I wouldn't have been. I would have been there to just see what I could get away with. And instead, I went into the military and learned discipline, order, those sorts of things. And then I can come out and I can use that in my new walk into school. It's where I'm there for a purpose as opposed to being there because we're going to see what party's going on this weekend.
Well, I think something important to remember is that it's okay to switch goals. It's all right to grow into a different area. If that's the case, I wouldn't call it giving up. It's changing your mind, and you're allowed to do that. I guess the key is if you throw in the towel on something that still means so much to you, well, those are the moments you should remember the words of brilliant men before you. Hang in there. Persevere. Don't quit. If you think about it, it's a lot of the same slogans we push on the obstacle course. I'm telling you, OCR is a metaphor for life. Don't give up. You're almost there. Thank you so much for checking out the More Than Mudcast. Please like it, subscribe, share. I really don't even know all your options. I'm learning, okay? All right, but I am glad you're here for the ride. I hope to grab some great interviews at the U.S. OCR Championships coming up, so look forward to that. Good luck on your next race, and if anyone asks you why you do it, let them know it's more than mud. It's a movement. I'm back with Tenille Reed, who placed sixth at this year's CrossFit Games, the highest placing American woman. And Tenille, I know your faith is really important to you. How did you become a believer?
My parents never forced me or made me go to church. I just learned it, and then I prayed about it, and I felt that it was right. And, I think my biggest part of my testimony comes from the fact that I've used the principles that the church has taught me, and they've never steered me wrong. I probably said about 1,000 prayers during the game, just asking for help and for strength, and that I could just do my best.
How does your faith affect your CrossFit training and competing?
Well, I would say that when I don't feel right in the church, I don't think I could focus on anything else. What people talk about having balance in their life in all areas, you got to work on your spiritual side. You got to work on your physical side. You got to work on, your emotional side with your family. And so all those things come together to help you be a more complete person. And personally, for me, there isn't one without the other. So I am such a strong believer that, if I wasn't doing right in the church and I wasn't being a good person, good things are not going to come to me. You have to put him first, and then he will help you.
You know, the thing about CrossFit, and for that much, even OCR, if you want to be one of the best, it requires a lot of your time and focus. It's almost always in your mind in some aspect. And so by that standard, it can easily become your god, your idol. How do you find that balance to where you give the sport all that it would naturally require of you, and yet at the same time, not putting it above God and family?
Well, because I was raised that family is the most important thing in your life, and nothing's more important than that. And that's always how I felt. I've always wanted to have a wonderful family, and my parents and my brother and my sisters are my world. And now that I have my husband, he's my world too, and I come home every night, and he's kind of like my balance. I don't think about the gym. I just spend my time with him, and they don't care if I win or lose. They just love me. It helps me have balance in my life, pretty much. It's the only way I can really describe or answer that question. Is he's the most important thing to me. If, heaven forbid, break my arm and I couldn't do CrossFit, yeah, I'd be sad, but in the end, I'd be like, no, I still have my husband, I still have my family, and those are the most important things to me. So everything else doesn't really matter.
Well, whether it's CrossFit or OCR, I don't think either of them can take the place of God, but they definitely complement the reformation that he's doing in our lives. And likewise, I think God can help us in our individual sports and, of course, in our daily lives. Thank you again for checking out the More Than Mudcast. Let's do it again soon.